As an intensive care nurse in Melbourne, Caroline Dew knows about COVID up close.
The disease is savage. It not only impacts your lungs, it affects your heart, your kidneys, it affects your brain. They clot and bleed at the same time, and they rapidly deteriorate. Rapid escalation in care.
While ICUs are designed to deal with critically ill people with high clinical needs, COVID has brought a new complexity to the work of intensive care teams.
The intensive care units were reconfigured to boost capacity. So we had new layouts, and it was an unfamiliar layout. All of our COVID unit had to have the engineers come in and reconfigure the ventilation to make sure they're all negative pressure units. The PPE was, although we were grateful for it, we had excellent PPE. It's hot and uncomfortable. It's cumbersome. It's limiting your movement, and it takes time to effectively don and doff the equipment and safely. And when you're in there, you have to think about limiting your exposures.
Are you allowed to hold a COVID patient's hand?
Absolutely, and we did. Some of the most heartbreaking moments of the last COVID surge was the fact that we weren't allowed to have family in with the patients. It was heartbreaking being that personal contact for them, trying to facilitate these heartbreaking conversations over phone and iPad. We were facilitating critical care, we were helping with equipment and management of their life support, but then we're also having to be that comfort.
Intensive care resources are finite.
A relatively small number of intensive care patients can really strain the entire health system.
Sydney-based intensive care specialist and paediatrician Dr. Greg Kelly says ICU capacity can't be viewed simply in terms of available beds.
We have an incredible community of intensive care professionals who work very hard, and we are able to flex up our capacity. And some work that people did last year showed that we could almost triple our capacity in the short term. However, what we have seen again play out overseas is that, of course, that massive increase in throughput really comes at a cost in terms of staff well-being, burnout, increased healthcare worker infections, and it does tend to be a little bit of a domino effect. So we'd really like to avoid having to do that.
So I'm just wondering, like, what the flow-on effect is for patients and staff if beds are full, ICU beds are full, and you've got everyone working at full tilt. Can you sort of step me through what happens on the ground?
Yeah, so I think that what a lot of people don't realise is that ICUs in Australia and other places in the world run very tight all the time, and it's quite common for one local hospital, even a big one, to run out of ICU capacity and for ambulances and patients to have to be diverted to others. When COVID patients come to ICU, and especially if they end up on a ventilator, they stay a very long time, much longer than average ICU patients. So while it might, you know, we might say we have, well, only 50 patients or so in ICU with COVID in New South Wales at the moment, and we have over 800 beds in the state. Those patients stay a couple of times longer than average. So those 50 patients are actually closer to 150 or 200 in terms of equivalent. And then you can see that how that really starts to affect our capacity. That means that we then can't admit other patients who are sick because they've, you know, been in an accident or had a cardiac arrest. And we also can't do the very major surgery and planned procedures that support all the other health systems, things like major cancer surgery, major heart surgery.
He also says the daily raw numbers around community cases and deaths hide another grim and uncertain reality.
What is missed when we just talk about death is the other impacts of COVID. So we know that people who have any critical illness, not just COVID, often have very long-term problems, potentially lifelong, in terms of their memory, their thinking, their physical function, their ability to return to work and normal life. So they're the survivors, the apparently good outcomes. We know that people who've had COVID, even those who don't end up critically ill, can have symptoms for many months afterwards.
It's familiar territory for ICU teams in the UK, which have seen wave after wave of COVID.
you know, my mum was Australian, with lots of really, really good friends in Australia. I have some wonderful colleagues here in the UK who are Australian. And I'll tell you one thing, I really, really hope what happens here won't happen to you. You really don't want to have the experience that we've had.
Dr. Rupert Pearce is an intensive care consultant based in London and spokesperson for the Intensive Care Society.
We have learned successively how to better and better cope to deliver the best patient care we can in the face of a system that's so overwhelmed that it's no longer able to function in the way that it normally would. And that's got implications, obviously, for the staff, obviously, for the patients with COVID, but actually, as importantly, for all the other patients who've got all the other medical problems that would normally be using our National Health Service.
For Melbourne ICU nurse Caroline Dew, her thoughts are with her colleagues in Sydney.
They're being slammed right now, and I just really feel for them. I know they're coming home exhausted, wondering if they've done all they can. They've got the fear of bringing the virus home to their family. And they're coming home to their families that are also in lockdown, and they have all the stresses of that associated too. There's families, kids in remote learning to come home to, and navigating essential shopping and caring for relatives, and then having to front up and do it all again the next day as well. They're working longer shifts. They're working more of them. They're doing it with unfamiliar staff because they would have had extra personnel recruited in. I really, really feel for them.